We have on the, is the Rev or the Rumba?
Stickies.
Stickies Fingers Hotline.
Just Stickies. They're making a conversion to Stickies.
Okay, I didn't get the memo. Suzanne never told me. Sticky Fingers, Stickies Hotline, Coach Nolan Richardson. Coach, how are you today?
I am very, very fine there, Pat. How are you doing?
Oh, fantastic. It's good to have you on. I know you were down in Little Rock over the weekend. We kind of missed each other
right
down on I-40. But your trip to Fayetteville, I mean, Little Rock this weekend was good?
It was very good. I always enjoy going to Little Rock and having the opportunity to watch ULAR females play was another joy to watch.
And obviously you're now ingrained. I mean, just it's a nonstop 24-hour deal with just the recruiting process and just evaluation process. You're still coaching WNBA Tulsa, and that's probably, I know talking with you, that's taking up all of your time.
Well, I tell you what, it takes up quite a bit of the time. You know, it's like changing a new career, trying to figure out and understand female basketball as, you know, coaching all those years in the males department. And now switching over, you know, it takes to me a lot of time to actually just learn more and more by watching more college games being played and watching young ladies play and trying to get the evaluations or get some of the young ladies that may fit what you're thinking and how you want to play.
How do you give me your evaluation of your first year? How do you think you guys did, and maybe some of the positives and negatives of the first season in WNBA?
Well, when you know, starting off, we didn't know at first when they approached me about the job. At that point, it was going to be an expansion team. That means that we were able to go into every other team and pick their sixth and seventh player off of 11 other teams. And it didn't work out that way because of the fact that the ownership decided to go ahead and buy the Detroit team. And when they did that, the starting five did not show up to participate with the move. And so some of them were free agents. Some of them just didn't want to play in Tulsa or whatever the reason might be. And so we brought all the other five young ladies that came along. We're all basically in the backup role. So that made it tough immediately having to go find players, having the five that were backups now are your starters.
Mm-hmm.
And now you got to find some people to back them up. So it that was the difficult part, I think. I think had we gone the other route, we might have been a little bit more successful by me being able to pick off some good players off of each of the teams. My first year, coaching the women, we had to make a lot of trades during the year. So we had players in and out. So there was never any continuity trying to find the right people, the right players to play in a system that's so demanding. And so for that part, I don't think we were very good when it came to winning and loss column. Mm-hmm. But it gave me a foundation and a and what I can do now is come in with now having the number one and the number seven pick and having players that I can move for better, some better players who didn't show up. That gives me an opportunity to revamp our basketball team on the ground level as opposed to coming in trying to find some players to play immediately. And I think that was the big difference. This year will be a lot different. Hopefully because of the fact they understand what I'm trying to get accomplished.
That number one pick, is that going to be Maya Moore?
From all indications, Maya Moore is no question going to be the number one pick. And, of course, Minnesota has that pick. We've got the number two pick, mm-hmm. and there's quite a few young ladies out there that fit that bill. At the same time, we also have the number seventh pick, mm-hmm. which is also in the first round.
Right.
So we traded off a young lady for a player and a first-round pick. So I was trying to build from that point.
Do you like the trade and being able, the ability to be able to cut during the season, trade as opposed to the recruit process? I know there's probably some level of recruiting still that has to go on when you're talking to free agents, but do you like that part of the pro game versus the college game? Is it easier? Is it fit your style better?
I feel it's a lot different than what I used to go through. I think it's, from my standpoint, at this time in my career, I like the situation that I'm in now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about going out trying to sell who you are or a program. It's all about is there a trade available, or are you drafting? You know, you're not, everybody makes the same salary, so it's not like we're going to pay you more
right.
as a rookie coming out. All rookies make the same in the first four, and then the next eight makes the same amount of money. So it's a lot, to me, it's a lot easier on the pro level than it would be on the college level.
Coach Nolan Richardson joining us on the Stickies hotline today, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Federal holiday. Can you just talk a little bit? Obviously, when I was putting this show together, I couldn't think of anybody that maybe had the insight into just thoughts on today's day and the importance of it and what it means to you. Of course, the book that came out last year, 40 Minutes of Hell, was based on a lot of, you know, really what you went through, okay, taking everyone from how you grew up to, you know, where you ended up today. So can you just talk about the importance of this day and what it means to you?
Well, Dr. King is no doubt in my mind, and I'm sure in many blacks, and particularly those who have benefited from the fact that, you know, we call him a paver. You know, we're all walking on gravel. Dr. King helped pave the roads for us to have a chance to even be successful, or to even have the opportunity to be successful in this great country of ours. And so he, to me, is something that every African-American, and particularly an American, could go back and trace his history of what he has done, along with others. But he stands out as the most influential, as far as I'm concerned, in history today. And in our country, our lives are based on what happens during history. Mm-hmm. And Martin, Dr. King, is certainly, you know, he didn't win the Nobel Prize and be the youngest ever to receive it because he did so many things to deserve it. Mm-hmm. And so this is a great day, and it's a day that I hope that all of us celebrate. You know, as he would say, he may not be there, but the days are going to come where we will be all treated equal. And hopefully those days are coming. But he set the clock in tone and in tune for these days to come.
Now, in your lifetime, during your, you know, coaching career and growing up, can you remember some of the significant times that maybe you had to draw on some of his experiences and his life lessons? And I guess, Coach, where were you when he was assassinated? Were you still in high school?
I had just finished completing my college career in 63.
Okay.
You know, going back to when I grew up and knowing the history, basically from the Jackie Robinson days, and then being able to go through the same situations as trying to get a job, trying to move forward, doors being closed, not having the opportunity, let's say, that the Caucasian coaches or players who had played with me were able to advance and go in to be maybe head coaches and things of that nature. And I started in the seventh grade. And, you know, work your way to the eighth grade, ninth grade. I mean, there is not one grade I skipped
right.
from a standpoint of coaching.
Right.
You know, so my background is totally different than all the coaches that some of these coaches today, or especially the ones who already were assistants somewhere and become head coaches. I had to work my way to that point.
Right. So in that sense, do you see yourself as a paver as well in college basketball?
Well, I had to do what my grandmother had talked to me about one year when I didn't want to go because they didn't let blacks sleep in the hotel in high school. And she mentioned to the fact that you have to go, because if you don't go, these things will continue to happen. You have to go make the bat speak, because you can't be heard. So you go make your bat speak for those kids that will eventually benefit from what you've done. And I was very, at 16, 15, 16 years, I couldn't understand. She says, my kids. Well, she was talking about the African-American race. At that time, I just thought, well, I don't have any kids.
Right.
But as time went on, those words continue to ring in my ear. And I wasn't out there for just Nolan Richardson anymore. I was out there to prove something, maybe to open some grounds. You know, like in El Paso, finally I got a job as the head coach, and not nowhere in the state of Texas where they're a black coach at a mixed school during that time. And so I saw that. And the only way that I could stay was have to be able to win. And so winning gave me a chance to pay some roads. And I saw that. I saw it when I moved to Western Texas Junior College, where there were no black coaches in the entire state from a junior college standpoint. But we won. Right. And we won a national championship. And I look back, and I saw other black coaches now being hired. I went to Oklahoma. I saw the same thing. Oklahoma may be the only state that hired black football, black basketball coaches. You know, and I saw that, and I thought, well, they go to the Southwest Conference. When I got there, there was none in the whole South. After we were successful, I saw coaches getting jobs in the South, you know. Mm-hmm. And I knew that back in our days that the only time we would ever get a job is that it had to be a private school. Georgetown had John Thompson. I was at Tulsa. Usually the private schools were the weaker schools who had no programs. We had to go in and make a program. If you fall on your face, you're not going to get a chance, a second chance. I knew those things. There are no second chances. And so, you know, you work twice as hard simply because you're not only now working for you and your family, but hopefully well enough to have those roads paved like Dr. King had done to get us to the position just to get a job.
Right. I guess I'd never talked to you about President Obama, first black president, in, you know, maybe your thoughts on that and how you felt when he was elected. And you satisfied with the progress that the country has made as a whole, not only in coaching, in the coaching ranks, but just as a whole since those days, you know, in Dr. King, and then your thoughts on President Obama.
Well, the thing is that Dr. King is the reason we got an Obama also, the president. For us, when I saw where the country was before he got the job, I mean, it was in a shambles for us, you know, that I could see. And of course, when you have the critics that are complaining about his what he's doing as president, he's only been in it 2.5 years. There was a group that was there 8 years. Prior to that, another 8. You know, they ran the country. Right. So, you know, you don't take it's just like sports. They hire a coach. If he doesn't have the material, he may have to have spend some time to get to the grounds and where he could be successful. When I took over Arkansas's job, I can go related back to the president. When I took that job, I was the worst coach in America in Arkansas, according to Arkansas and some of the people. But I had not a whole hell of a lot to work with at right. that time.
Right.
But then you have to have time. You have to have some time and some patience in order to get those things in place. And that's what I think is happening with Obama. And I am very proud. I never dreamed in my lifetime I would see this happen. I had said that many times. Not in my lifetime.
Yeah.
I am so proud. In my lifetime, I got to see it happen. So that gives me renewed faith in our country because it can be done. If it can be done and our kids can see that it can be done, then it'll make the biggest changes over the long haul. You may not see it immediately. But over the long haul, that is a plus in this country, as far as I'm concerned.
So, and then I guess overall, you sound pretty positive about the way things are done. And in college coaching, it just always comes up. The NFL has the Rooney Rule, and you know I think college is trying to, I guess I don't know how you really put it, but give more opportunities or at least interviews and things like that. Are you satisfied with how that's going as well in the college ranks?
Well, you'll never be totally satisfied until a job is given to the person who, regardless of his race, creed, or color. I don't think that has happened exactly that way yet. I think it's gone a long different way. I remember when I started, it was 6-7 black coaches. There was no football coaches at one point. So there has been some progress. And those who would look at that would think, wow, we're really moving. Yeah, but it's 2011.
Yeah.
So it's 2011, and we're still moving. Yes, we're moving. But are we moving fast enough? I'm not sure that I could agree with that. Mm. It's kind of like no one wants to talk race. No one. And that's sad because that's what it's about. When it's about race, then you need to talk about it to try to get it ironed out. But everybody wants to say, well, he's playing a race card or he's doing this. No. All I'm saying is that if a person is qualified, he should have the opportunity, whether it's black, Mexican, Chinese, Jewish, it doesn't matter what race. If you're qualified and can, you should have an opportunity to be able to do that. And so I think it's slow.
Yeah.
I think it's moving, but I think it's slow.
Well, I guarantee you, Coach, you're going to be busy this week and this, you know, upcoming month. I'm sure I know I talked to you on Saturday, and you get a lot of speaking engagements to do. But I really do think, and, you know, of course, I knew a lot about your life, but the book, 40 Minutes of Hell, The Extraordinary Life of Nolan Richardson, Russ Bradbury did a good job, I think, of kind of telling everyone your story and your struggle, and I think you are a trailblazer. You paved the way for a lot of people, and whether or not everyone recognizes it, there's certainly a lot of people around here who do, and I encourage everyone. I guess the book was just re-released. You can get it on Amazon, too, as well.
Right.
Russ Bradbury, was the author.
Yeah, Russ. The thing about the book is that the reason it took Russ pretty close to 5 years. He did a tremendous job of research. And if you notice, the book didn't just talk about me. It talked about other coaches, other places, other things that were done. And that's how I wanted the book. I didn't want this book to be, oh, he wins the national championship, guy shoots a three, and everybody goes off happy ever after.
Right.
That's not – I just wanted to share some history.
Right.
I wanted to – and it didn't paint a beautiful picture of me, and I didn't mind. I said, you know, this is not really about just me. It's about – the things that I felt. It's about what actually happened, and to me that's important. If the kids were to read it, then they could understand that there is a chance if you don't give up.
Mm-hmm. Well, Coach, you certainly made an impression on my life, and I know everyone else's lives that has been able to come across you. So I appreciate you for everything you do and for coming on and spending time with us. I know you're really busy with everything, but we thank you for taking the time for us.
Thank you very much, Pat. You're still my man.
I appreciate it, Coach. And
all right.
I'll come up there. I'll see you soon.
All right, Pat. Take care.
Okay, thanks, Coach.
Uh-huh.